Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 5:05. You are listening to Women Talk on Talk Radio Europe. It's a good sign when we're sitting in the room dancing to the adverts. I feel like this is going to be a fun hour. With me in the studio, we have Audrey Spearing, Helen Waterloo and Georgina Shaw. Hi. Lovely to see you all. Thanks so much for coming in. If listeners want to get involved, if you have any comments on what we are talking about, then please do. You can give us a call, 952-78-4000. If you don't, though, it doesn't matter. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about by ourselves. I don't normally do kind of current affairs or anything like that on this show, but there was a specific thing that I thought was an interesting one to do with this awful volcano that's been happening on still happening on La Palma. Spain's tourism minister has been accused of insensitivity after suggesting that a devastating and ongoing volcanic eruption on the Canary island of La Palma could be used as an attraction to lure visitors to the archipelago. And it got me thinking about people who travelled to places like Auschwitz, for example, and there's been a lot of outrage in the past of people who take selfies. You know, a lot of people take selfies on holiday or even not on holiday. But if you're in a place like that, which has had such a terrible historical event attached to it, is it completely inappropriate to either take a selfie or have a photograph taken of yourself in front of said monument or attraction? Any thoughts on this?
I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think from this particular context with the volcano, I would say that every cloud has to have a silver lining, and that's a pretty mega cloud. Mm-hmm. So if there is something that the island can take from it in a positive way, be that tourism, then they should. And obviously that island is a tourist centre already. And, you know, I think it is an extraordinary act of nature that's going on. Of course, you wouldn't want to be caught in the crossfires, but I think I would be interested to go and visit something like that. And I don't think it's disrespectful for the people who have lost their homes. It might actually help them rebuild them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would be amazing to see. Mm. I mean, if you've seen the videos online watching it, I mean, it really is quite incredible. So it would be amazing to see it. Maybe it's completely not the same as something like Auschwitz. Maybe that was a really bad comparison.
Well, I know what you mean. I mean, I've seen people go to like the killing fields in Vietnam and things like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would take a selfie there, but equally the people of that place are benefiting from the tourism that is coming there. And kind of however people want to experience that thing, I'm not sure it's for us to judge, really.
Hmm. Yeah, each to their own and all that. Any other thoughts on that one?
I think actually it's quite a good idea, because at least this way they're going to get some money together. And after this devastation that's been happening on the island, at least, I think it's a good idea just to every little thing helps. So it's for the population up there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's an article which made me smile, talking about, I'm sorry to mention the C word, Christmas. Can it really be true?
COVID.
there's a few. Christmas. This journalist was saying, can it really be true? Are we thinking about Christmas again? It seems only a nanosecond since we were all in a heap of anxiety over what to do about last year's festivities when we were in and out of lockdown. Were we or were we not going to be able to get together? Was it worth ordering a turkey? Never had the concept of relatives gathering around the tree in a cozy, mutually supportive group felt more potent. And it just sort of made me smile thinking about Christmas. I thought it'd be a fun topic to talk about. Are you obsessed with Christmas? Do you like having decorations all around the house? Do you really go to town, or does it really annoy you when people do that? Normally people are kind of one or the other with Christmas. You love Christmas, Audrey, I know.
I love Christmas, but I'm actually vegetarian, so I haven't got to worry about the turkey issue, which is a good thing. For me, Christmas is, I love it. I love the build-up, but I'm a little bit concerned that Christmas decorations are already on sale, because Halloween hasn't even come yet.
No, exactly.
And in dump stores and all these shops, they're selling all the Christmas things. But for me, Christmas, I love just being around people that I love and having fun. And when you're vegetarian, it's a bit easier, because you can always have vegetables. So I'm not worrying about ordering the turkey. But I think it's a nice thing. It lifts people's spirits. You spend time with your favourite people. You know, you think of your family. I just think we're obviously what's gone on with the pandemic and everything, with people maybe struggling a little bit financially. People have learned a lot that maybe it's more important, rather than buying presents for Christmas, that you spend time with people, or you barter services, or like massages, or going for walks on the beach, or something more lovely. And so I think that Christmases have changed now, which is, I think it's a good thing actually. I think people have learned from it.
More simple pleasures.
I think that this year's Christmas, for those of us who didn't get to spend the Christmas last year with our families, is going to take even more significance than it would have done before. And I think that for me, I didn't manage to get home and my parents weren't able to get here. And I just cannot wait this year to actually get together with everybody. And I completely agree with you, Audrey. I wouldn't worry so much about what I'm receiving as long as we're all together again. So I'm really looking forward to that.
So will you go back to England then for Christmas?
I don't know. I was planning to, but my mum's not sure whether she wants to come here. So that's something still on the list to discuss. But the key for us is we know we do not want to be separated again this year.
I think, 100%. Hannah, like, it's like what you said, because obviously the rules keep changing. It's difficult to kind of plan, you know, where we've all had that kind of restrictive feeling that, like, it's really taught us to kind of live more in the moment. So it's like, okay, so I might be here for Christmas, I might not be. Maybe I can travel, maybe I don't. So it's very difficult to plan in advance, really, so much now, isn't it? Which has pros and cons, obviously.
But will you be with your family?
Yes, I will be. I'll be staying in Spain. I'll have my children, hopefully all around me. So that will be really great. I'm not going back to Holland, especially not as everything is going now with the airlines. And it doesn't make it really into a Christmas feeling if you want to go and travel at the moment.
Yeah, with all the rules.
Yes, with all the restrictions. No, it's much better to stay just at home, be all together. And like Audrey said, it's much nicer to have everybody around you. It's not about really receiving.
What's on the table? It's
around the table.
It's so true.
The other interesting thing, talking about presents, I always think, and I've talked about this many, many times on the radio with various guests, that the pressure that parents are often under to buy the latest trainers or toys for their kids, and the amount of money, maybe not in recent years, but that parents traditionally have spent on their children at Christmas, and the pressure that they're under to feel like they need to do that to keep up with their friends and their friends' parents and all that kind of thing. And when you speak to most adults looking back at their childhood, or even children now, and you say, what can you remember about Christmas? What was your favourite Christmas? What do you remember? They don't say, or very rarely will they say, oh, I remember the time when I got this computer game that I'd always wanted, or I remember that pair of trainers that I really loved. We normally remember memories. You know, you remember when your grandma fell asleep in front of the Queen's speech. You remember when you went to the beach and it rained. You know, you remember kind of fun things to do with friends and family when things have gone wrong. But it's all to do with
people.
Yeah, it's totally about experiences and not presents.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think as a parent, I mean, my child is 18 now, but I know Georgina's little boy is 10. Father Christmas can be very expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive. And we all know that children now, they want the best iPhone, they wanted this, they want that. It's quite expensive, but like you said, Hannah, with the like experiences and spending quality time with somebody is more important. It sounds cheesy, but it's true.
Yeah.
Being present in the present moment is more important than giving a present that maybe you can't afford to give, but you feel like you have to keep up with the Joneses.
I think
it's a lot of pressure.
For me, it was really interesting because I do, my son's 10, and 2 years ago we went to Thailand for Christmas because it was our honeymoon.
Oh, lovely.
And so we said that Father Christmas didn't go to Thailand.
Okay.
So, and that the present for us all was to be there together and to have this amazing adventure.
Yeah.
And so we basically did almost nothing. We got a couple of little bits of Lego from like the local shop in the village. And I wasn't sure how my son would react to that. I thought that when the day came, he'd be really disappointed.
Yeah.
He wouldn't think it was actually real, that we wouldn't give him anything, that kind of thing. And actually, none of it. He was just so excited and happy to have all this quality time with us, be in this stunning place, have no distractions from just time together. And that, for him, he said all through the holiday, this is the best Christmas and I don't need the
lovely
stuff. And that was when he was 8. So I think that parents are probably might be surprised by their children if they didn't give quite so much, or they did something in a different way, they might attach the love to the giving of that gift. But I think maybe sometimes the children don't as much as you think that they do.
That's interesting.
And I think plus you can always say that Father Christmas can't come so far because he hasn't got enough fuel for his sleigh.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, that fits in well. Very topical.
There's a bit of a fuel crisis.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think for some parents must feel that some... I'm sure we all know this with friends as well. Some people are really easy to buy for. You know, there must be some people that you know, whether it's your kids, whether it's your friends, whether it's your parents, that kind of every shop you go into, oh, so-and-so would love that, so-and-so would love... And it must be really easy to kind of get carried away and just buy loads of... I'm saying it for your absolute personal experience here, not from a children point of view, but friends and things and parents. And, like, it's just so easy to just keep buying and all forget about it as well. I'm really... organized and buy things when I see things. So if it's somebody's birthday in January, for example, and then I see something that they'd love in February, I don't think, oh, well, I don't need to get that till next January. I'll think, oh, that's perfect for them, I'll keep it and either give it for Christmas or for birthday the following year.
And forget where you put it in your wardrobe. Well,
yeah, that can happen. But also you can forget that you've bought it, so it comes round to their birthday or Christmas, and then you buy other stuff and you think, oh no, I've already got that as well. So you need to keep on top of it. But are you organized with Christmas present buying? Is that, am I the only one that does that?
Oh no, I'm horribly disorganized.
Are
with
you?
It yeah, totally. I just kind of, I am living more in the moment as well with COVID, but also always I was like, you know, until it's December I cannot think about it. I don't want to. I want to start the sort of okay, if I open an advent calendar door, I'm now allowed to be into Christmas.
Yeah,
not before and not after that sort of, you know, Three Kings thing. That's it.
Yeah.
And and so I want to be able to do it all close to it, but then life gets in the way, doesn't it? And before you know it, it's like the 20th of December and I think, oh my God, I've bought nothing.
Well, that's my husband and a lot of men, you know, going out on Christmas Eve with a kind of last minute manic shop. And I just think, well, you know, you've had all year. Why does it need to be last minute, does it?
PJ, take note.
Exactly.
But Hannah, I'm thinking about when it comes to Christmas as well, people are so used to buying so many things, especially like with Amazon and all the online shopping that people have got addicted to because they've been at home. I know this gonna, again, it's going to sound cheesy, but when we're all living here, I think it's so nice that we kind of support local people. So, you know, people have struggled financially during these times, so if we know someone who has a product or a service that lives nearby, to spend 50 euros and give them the money rather than going on to like online shops and giving these companies who are multi billionaires, support the local people in our area and buy these products and services to help people around us.
Definitely. Good advice.
And I think as well, maybe that you like receiving a detail, it's already the thought that counts. So I really like that. It's like, it doesn't really matter what it is, but it's so nice that you just, oh, just like a candle. I mean, I always think candles are great to give.
Yeah.
Lovely. But also the other thing is when we do see something, or if I see something and I think, oh, that'll be really great for all the yoga ladies or for my friends, then I'll just buy loads of them and I'll just share them all out like a little, you know, happy festival days, Merry Christmas. It's just,
oh, that's nice.
Just a small thing.
Yeah, definitely. A token, exactly.
A token, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be a big thing. Just for someone to, you know, that you've been thought of and someone cares enough to say, I just wanted to give you a little something. It's lovely.
Well, then that means, Helen, for Christmas, I'm going to give you a hug.
Yeah. Oh.
I'll give you one now.
Can you wrap it up?
Oh, she's bought you a candle and everything.
Show off.
It's a big one, though, old.
I hope so.
We'll take a break.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. With me in the studio now is Audrey Spearing, Helen Waterloo and Georgina Shaw. You're listening to Women Talk on Talk Radio Europe. If you want to get involved, you don't have to call us. You can send us an email if you like, studio@tre.radio, or you can send us a WhatsApp to +34 645 99 67 95. So there's an article here that I thought, wow, that would be an interesting one to discuss. A Christian nurse who claims she was treated like like a criminal for wearing a cross. So this is a gold cross on a necklace, a small, normal size necklace, I suppose you could say. She was wearing this cross. She's suing an NHS hospital for discrimination. Mary told an employment tribunal yesterday that she was singled out and her managers waged an anti-Christian campaign to get her to remove the necklace. Interestingly, she worked at Croydon University Hospital in South London for 18 years and had worn the small gold cross for 40 years. So it's just in the last few years they decided that it was inappropriate and not right to wear it. Thoughts on this?
Well, my question would be, is it a staff policy that you can't wear jewellery, or is it specifically what that symbol stands for? Because obviously in a medical setting, when I was reading that article, it was talking about it being dangerous because a patient could pull on it, for example, or it could get caught. If that was the case, then I would support the hospital, because I think that it, just because it has a cross on it shouldn't be able to be worn if another item of jewellery isn't allowed to be. However,
fair point.
If on the flip side, because I think again in the article it was talking about other people wearing jewellery and a hijab and other things, then 100% she should be allowed to express herself and her religion in that way. So I think it's a really tricky subject, this, and this hijab issue. I've seen in a lot of papers. I'm from London originally, hugely multicultural, and my feeling is people should be able to express their beliefs however they want to.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't contravene something that is either dangerous or, you know, some reason why really, really, really they cannot do it. And so that sort of straddles the line for me of whether, if it is just because it's Christian and it's an easy religion to kind of get after because you can't on the other ones, let's say, then 100% she should be fighting that. But, you know, there are lots of things I think to take into consideration.
I've always thought the really fascinating thing with that is talking about hijabs and things. So people who wear hijabs or turbans or whatever, things like that for their religion, wherever they are in the world, will continue to do that and will want to and need to feel that they need to wear those wherever they are in the world. I find it fascinating that if we as Westerners go to a country that requires you to cover your head or to cover your arms or whatever going into a religious building, that we adapt to their culture because that's what is expected in their places of worship or sometimes even in their country. I've sort of thought about this a lot and find it interesting how different things kind of apply in different countries. Some people can go to a different country and what they do in their own country still applies in a different country. But yet if others go to other countries, you have to adapt to their culture. I just find it fascinating. I'm not saying I think it's wrong. I just find that interesting how it can be different in different cultures and countries around the world.
Just about this lady about this necklace as well. Just coming back onto that one, I'm just wondering why they're actually like just in the last few years have started then actually singling her out. So is there another reason for it that she's actually just singled out because she wears a cross, or is it also because this lady is of colour, or is there something else playing?
Don't know. I wonder if again, whether it's the cross situation or whether if she had a Buddha on a necklace or whatever, you know, a symbol from a completely different religion, whether she would have been asked to remove it or not. I mean,
because they did it did say in the article that she could wear a cross like a sort of on her lapel, like a kind of badge, so sort of show her faith,
okay,
but not on a necklace. Right. And so that, to me, again, takes it in a different way, because it's not saying you're not allowed to show that you believe in this thing, but not wear it on a chain.
So, again, that's why it kind of makes sense that it's more to do with people pulling the chain.
Yeah. I think as well, though, that there's this sort of political correctness kind of gone crazy in many ways, although in other aspects we're not far enough along the route of being accepting and tolerant to all people. And so I think, you know, I wonder if it is in the last couple of years because something else has happened within that hospital to a different faith that has then sort of sent off warning bells and then made things to kind of go in place. And something that actually wasn't an issue before suddenly is at the forefront, is more politicised.
Yes, possibly so. There's a piece here talking about a subject which we have very different opinions on, I think, in the studio, so it'll be fascinating.
No arguing, no falling out. Vegetarians don't argue.
So there's a piece here written by Kate Mulvey, who is a friend of the station. She's been on with me and Giles and Selena many, many times. She may even be listening. So hi, Kate. So the article I read, and I was quite shocked, to be honest, when I read the article, but I thought it was a great one for discussion. So she says she's a meat eater. She has always been a meat eater, but she says eating meat is out of fashion. Even McDonald's now has a plant-based burger. But carnivore Kate Mulvey is tired of being steak-shamed. So she says, for example, when she goes out with a group of friends, she might be the only one that eats meat. The others are vegetarian or vegan, and kind of say to her, really, you want a steak? And kind of make her feel really bad for wanting to eat meat and enjoying eating meat. And she is just basically saying, I'm sick of it. It's what I want to eat. You know, you do your thing, I'll do mine. Yeah. We should all be able to be happy with that without trying to... yeah, impact each other's lives in that way. So, Audrey, yeah. Vegetarian.
Okay, so I just think everybody has the choice and the right to eat whatever they want to eat. I ate meat for 30 years before I turned vegetarian, so I'd never judge someone for eating meat, because how can you judge someone for doing something that you did? Mm-hmm. So although I've decided to be... more or less plant-based. Sometimes I'll eat fish if I'm somewhere and there's something else. I'm not totally vegetarian, like a slip sometimes. I wouldn't judge someone for having a burger or judge someone for having meat. And I think that's where it comes. It's more of a respect thing, that everybody chooses what they eat or what they think or what they read or who they wear. And we're all in a process of learning, whether it's nutrition or whether it's spiritual or whether it's just because we like the taste of something. So I really think everybody should be allowed to have a choice and a freedom of choice, and when you have that, then there's a mutual respect. So if I go out with Georgina and Georgina's having a steak and I'm having a veggie burger, you know, respect each other's difference of opinions, and then people got on better. But I have friends who are totally vegan, and I know some really strongly opinionated vegans, and I also really respect them. Because, you know, people have different priorities in their life, and some people who are vegan have sincere reasons for being vegan, maybe for their health, or maybe they've seen severe abuse of animals, which does happen, to be honest. And if people want to follow because they don't want animals to be hurt and they're vegan for that reason, that could be, they can be quite strong in their opinions, which you have to respect.
Understandably so.
So I think that's fair. But then again, if someone, you know, like my son, for example, I tried to turn him vegetarian, and he says, Mum, please stop sending me links of all animals being tortured. My nickname was Audrey Sendelink. He says, if you keep, listen, Audrey Sendelink, stop sending me. I says, Keen, you have to watch this video about the pigs. You have to watch. So I did that, and actually he turned vegetarian for a couple of years, and then slowly he started going back to eat meat. And I says, you know, we have to accept people and accept people's opinions and accept the differences and the process of people's life. You know, if you got news that, God forbid, you had cancer or something was wrong, maybe you would think differently about what you eat, because we know some foods are, you know, carcinogenic, or maybe for whatever reason. So I just think I have no problem with anybody eating meat at all, but personally I don't want to eat it, but I did. So I think we should just accept people's differences.
Georgina, as a meat eater?
Yes, well, you know that joke. I just got a punch in the arm.
No, I didn't. Nobody saw that.
I love meat. I love meat, and I'm happy to eat it. And you know that joke about how do you know if someone's a vegan? Don't worry, they'll tell you.
Yes, yeah.
I am definitely familiar with the campaigning nature around food and around choice about food. And so it's great to hear what Audrey says, and I'm exactly the same, but on the reverse. I choose to eat meat, but I really respect people that don't, because I know it's better for the environment, I know it's better for your health, and you know, I know that as we, you know, completely assault our planet, we will have to eat less meat. It's just no doubt about it. However, I like meat, and I will eat it with almost every meal. And I do understand what that author's saying about the shaming, because it's like, oh, well, I mean, don't you know about the environmental impact? Yes, but I still want to eat it.
Yeah.
Can I make better choices? Yes, I can. And I want to do that. But I also want to enjoy food and enjoy the things that I like to eat. And a lot of that is meat-based. So, I'm all right with that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Fair enough. I was just thinking in my head, trying to think of a comparison about a different subject, and I was thinking smoking is probably a good one. If you personally have had experience maybe with a family member who was affected, you know, died of lung cancer or something because of being a big smoker, you might have really strong opinions on smoking. And if you had friends who smoke, it might be very difficult for you to not say, "What are you doing? Why are you smoking?" Yeah. Don't you know how bad it is for you? And they are unlikely to go, "Oh no, I didn't know. Oh, I think I'll stop then." Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. I'd never thought about lung cancer. They know exactly what they're... I'm an ex-smoker myself, you know. They know exactly what they're doing and they're choosing to do it. Yeah. It's something they want to do. So nobody else really... I mean, as a loved one, you know, you can point it out to them and say, "You know, I'd really rather you didn't. I care about you."
Yeah.
Fine. But to keep saying it every time they light up is just pointless and... rude, quite frankly.
If they're not ready to take on that message.
Exactly.
Even send a link, Audrey. It wouldn't work, would it?
Exactly.
And you find that the worst of the smokers are, it's with the people who have reformed smokers.
Yes, ex-smokers are the worst.
Bang
moaning about the smell.
Yeah, definitely, I'm one of them.
So I'm thinking, our spiritual guru, her name is Nanali Shalaram, and she made a very good point. She said her husband ate meat, and she was a vegetarian, and when she used to go to dinner parties, people would say, "How do you get on? You know, your husband sees steak, and you and she mentioned, yeah, we make the perfect couple. He eats all the meat and I eat all the veg."
Yeah. Exactly. Lovely.
Yes, I'm not really a vegetarian. I mean, I don't actually buy it and I don't really touch or cook it. But then when I'm going to a restaurant once in a while, I would like to have sometimes, like once every 6 months, a nice steak. Yeah, I think that you should actually. And also, it's actually proven that for our bodies, our human bodies, it's quite good. There's something in there. So whatever the body lacks, the body will ask for it. So I won't judge anybody, but we all know as well what in that industry is happening. So it's a bit like smoking. Smoking's not good, but too much meat is not good either. I'm a very great believer, if you have everything in balance, that you can actually like live quite healthy and just be aware of things. Like if you want to have a steak, you want to eat it out, great. If you don't want to eat your meat, that's brilliant too. So it's live and let live, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know, I quite like these sort of like meat-free Mondays and things like that, where it kind of encourages you to just have one less meal of that meat and to sort of just think a little bit more of what are the vegetables or the vegetarian options that you like.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things I like, because they're not sort of you must never do it, but they're just saying, okay guys, if we all had one less meal of meat per week, it would make a big impact in our environment. And I like that kind of
approach. Coming on from what Georgina said, I think from a nutritional point of view, if we look at the meat free options, for example, you mentioned there McDonald's having
plant-based.
Sometimes they're actually less healthy than the actual meat, because even if you go and buy frozen fruit, they're full of preservatives and toxins and E-numbers and all these things that they're not so good. Those kind of packaged, you know, corn, mince, Linda McCartney burgers, you know, these sort of things. When you look at the back of the packet, they're actually not healthy options. If you're not going to eat the meat and you want to have a meat-free day, don't just go for like, you know, one of those
burgers.
Just have like roasted vegetables or lentils or chickpeas. I mean, there's so many beautiful, I know your husband cooks it, so many beautiful things you can do. Just people don't realise of the variety of food you can have that's vegetarian and vegan. Beautiful food.
Definitely. And very often, I was talking to someone recently, I won't mention the restaurant obviously, but talking to someone recently, there's a restaurant that does has a fabulous vegan menu, as well as a nice big menu that does meat and fish, which is quite rare, I think, down here. You know, normally there's the odd option, vegetarian, vegan if you're lucky, but there's literally a whole menu, which is great. And
they said that there's a big group of them out for dinner, and there was like a few of them were vegans, the rest weren't. So the vegan people ordered off the vegan menu. Everybody else had meat and fish, but they all kind of shared and picked bits, apart from the vegans. Yeah. Obviously didn't have the meat things. And she said all of the meat eaters all said that the vegan dishes were actually more delicious than the meat and fish, which I thought was really interesting.
Really,
and they didn't expect it to be. Yeah. You know, they were big meat eaters, yeah, and loved what they had. But they said, oh, can I just try a little bit of yours? And they did, and they couldn't believe how delicious it was. They really couldn't believe it.
My husband thinks that there's no meal unless it has meat involved, unless it's a curry, because vegetable curries are just amazing. And all the sauce and everything is just as good. And you kind of don't notice sometimes what those bits of cut up things are, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And to be honest, I think when we eat meat, we feel that's going to fill us up. But if you have a meal and you make something with lentils or chickpeas or quinoa, and they're actually quite filling and they're full of protein. Mm. So in our mind, we think, oh, we need the meat and two veg, which I was for a long time. So this is not a judgmental thing. Mm. But then when you have meals, let's say like a dal tarkar, you make mixed vegetables with quinoa and you put in herbs and spices, it's so filling that you don't actually miss that feeling. Mm. You only think you do because you've been kind of programmed to feel that way.
Definitely.
And you open your mind to it. And like you said, if you go to a restaurant and you eat all vegan, you're like, oh my goodness, it's beautiful, delicious.
Absolutely. Interesting. We'll be back after the break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today is Audrey Spearing, Helen Waterloo and Georgina Shaw. So there's an article here which made me chuckle. Richard Osman, the co-presenter of Pointless, I think he's really funny. And he's written an article here with the headline, "Don't Give Your Children Advice." He says, "I learned a lot from my mother. She raised me and my brother single-handedly from the time my dad left when I was 9. She never, ever gave us advice. She just let us be. She was also smart enough to encourage us to pursue the things we were interested in. She left us in peace." I thought this was really interesting. I wondered how rare that must be for parents not to give their kids advice. I mean,
how difficult. How do you not?
Well, yeah, exactly.
you've had all these years to learn all these things and you just want to desperately impart them.
You mean to make lots of mistakes.
Don't do what I did, son.
Yeah. Exactly.
But sometimes they need to do that, because sometimes they need to learn their own mistakes by it all. Because we had to do all that. We made all the mistakes, and our parents would say, like, oh, I wouldn't do that if I were you, but still we went ahead.
Can you relate to this a bit then?
Yeah. My parents said, like, oh, I wouldn't go to Spain and live up there if I were you. I said, we think you should actually study more and, like, go back to, like, uni and all those things. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. Mm. All I wanted to do was, like, leave, which I did, of course, and now I'm really pleased about it.
Yeah.
But, of course, if you're going to give your kids the advice all the time, we have to stand still about as well how we were when we were younger. Mm. How were we reacting if mum and dad said, like, oh, well, in Holland, of course, like, there's a lot of parents who actually give a lot of advice to the children.
But don't do it themselves.
But do it themselves, exactly. So, yes, I don't know. What about you, Georgina? Because you've got one of 10.
Yes, I have. I mean, I think I'm constantly giving him advice, probably. But I do try to do it in a way which is, this is the things that I've done. These are the things that I think are right. But what do you think? So we're very much
a diplomatic mom.
I am making the rod for my own back here, Audrey, because everything's discussion now in our household. Well, mummy, he's like 10 going on 21. Well, mummy, you know, I know that you think that because of so and so and so and so, but now where I'm growing up in this world, I do da da da, and I go, okay, amazing, you know, good. So, because I think that, you know, you do need to help them to try to make better decisions. But equally, I think you're totally right. They have to make the mistakes for themselves, otherwise they won't learn. And then there's a lot of the time where, I remember it from with my parents, they would say black and I would say white, you know.
Yeah,
if totally. They told me, don't do that.
Still doing that.
Yeah. If they said, don't do it, that was exactly what I was going to do.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful of falling into that trap as well and saying so much then. And since they suddenly they're going, wow, I want to be my own person and I'm going to do all the opposite stuff.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think with children, it's the children's job to push you to see how far they can go.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it is like that. And I think my son is going to be 18 soon. And I mostly had him by myself growing up. So I was, you know, Hannah, because you were there a lot of the time.
Yeah, and me.
And Hannah, she was like a little lesbian couple with a child.
Without the lesbian
bits. We had separate bedrooms.
Just to clarify.
And with Kian, I led kind of a very, yeah, I give him advice, but I was a bit more free in my way, you know, and even as he turned into a teenager, he said, Mum, I'm going out. I'd say, okay. I'd say, you can go out. Just please, if I WhatsApp you and just let me know that you're safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're going to drink alcohol, because if you tell them don't drink alcohol, yeah, they're going to drink alcohol.
Yeah.
If you say don't go to a party, they're going to go to the party.
Mm.
Maybe that's just how I see things, because I always wanted to be a bit of a rebel.
Yeah.
So with Kian, I just said to him, you know, I'm going to trust you to be home. I'm going to trust you that you're safe. And if you communicate with me and you treat me with respect, I'll treat you with respect.
Mm. And he really did.
He really did. It worked really, really well.
I think that's an interesting thing, giving kids the freedom, but saying, you know, you know how to behave, and trusting them and giving them freedom
can often
work a lot better than laying down loads of rules. 100%. If you do this, you'll be grounded. If you do that, you're not going out again, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
As you've both said, you would always do what you were told.
Even when it comes to alcohol, alcohol and partying and smoking, that kind of thing. You know, I said to Kian, do you want to have a drink? He says, Mum, you know what? He says, the fact that you're allowing me to do things, he says, I don't need to go out and do things behind your back, because you've always given me the freedom that if I want to have a beer, you'd let me have a beer. If I wanted to stay up late and watch a movie, you'd let me stay up late. He says, so now because I haven't got to rebel against it, I don't feel like I need to do it.
Yeah.
So it can actually work as a positive psychology to give your child a little bit of trust and a little, once there's confidence and they have kind of some sense of, you know, they know the right thing to do.
I
think that works really well. I one of the things I remember is I remember never wanting to kind of disappoint my mum and dad. That was an emotion I remember I had friends that used to say, oh, my dad's gonna kill me and that kind of thing. I was never afraid of getting into serious trouble. I just remember thinking, oh, I really don't want to disappoint my, because you know, when I tried cigarettes or whatever, my mum didn't massively yell at me or ground me. It was more,
I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. That was probably the worst thing.
If someone you love tells you, I'm so disappointed, that is probably the worst thing, because you felt you've really let the person down who you love and yourself down. So if you want to really get on someone's nerve, tell them you've disappointed. They've disappointed.
Definitely. I'm not even sure if she ever said that. I think it was just the worry that she would.
Hannah, your mum was quite free-spirited.
Definitely.
So you probably had the same kind of bringing up that you could be free.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And always felt that probably in a similar way with you and Kian, always felt comfortable that I could go to her with anything. Mm. You know, if I had done something a bit naughty, I would tell her.
No, Hannah.
I couldn't live with the guilt. Yeah. So I'd say, last night I actually tried a cigarette or whatever.
Yeah.
And the first thing she would always say is, thank you for telling me.
And I always felt comfortable to be able to. I really hope I can get Lucas to do that with me, because that I was the same with my mum as well.
That's lovely.
And although, yes, I was worried about the disappointment and the judgment, she did give me a safe space to kind of come in, and I would tell her all the kind of stories from the party, some of which included me, some of which didn't.
Yeah.
And her friends couldn't believe that I was telling her the whole truth, because I never took drugs and my friends did. They were like, yeah, your girl is, she's just not telling you. And I said, no, but you never made me feel like I couldn't tell you. You always made me feel like if things went wrong at a party or something, she was the only mum that knew where we actually were. The only one. And I would really like to be able to be that person for my son as well.
Yeah.
Because we all know that you do make silly decisions. You do get yourself into trouble as a youngster. And if you can have that relationship and that trust with your parent, I think you've smashed it as a parent.
Definitely.
I really do.
Definitely.
Yes, I've got the same. I think
that's lovely.
Yes, I've got a lot of trust with my children. Really, like, absolutely lovely. However, like Audrey, of course, I've brought them up on my own as well. And I have to say, we've always had rules, but the rules were like, as you are playing mum and dad at the same time, in my case, it was a bit different. I had two. So it was like, sometimes you have to really like say, okay, well, we're going to be home at 12 o'clock. I'm picking you up 12 o'clock and it's not going to be 12:15. But those rules were more like set as well to have the balance again. And it also depends where you're living, how old they were. I mean, you know, if they're like 14, 15 years old, yeah, I think 12 o'clock is a good time to be picked up in those days.
Yeah.
Now we're already in a totally different era. If you see the 14, 15 year old ones now, they already like...
they look 19 or 20.
Yes, yes. It's a completely different change now. I probably sound like my grandmother now.
It happens to us all.
And you smell like her too. Time for an ad break, thanks.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the last part of today's Women Talk. With me in the studio today is Audrey Spearing, Helen Waterloo and Georgina Shaw. There's an article here talking about talking. It says Britain's stiff upper lip has been replaced by a compulsive need to share. But, whisper it, women are starting to question the value of paying thousands for therapy. Apparently, it's not always good to talk. So we were just kind of talking about sharing and the importance of being able to share and go through things. I was definitely brought up to share and the importance of being able to talk about things. You know, the idea of, are you okay? I'm fine. Never really kind of worked. Yeah. I was always encouraged to share what was going on, which has kind of always kept on throughout my life, to be honest. But this article is saying it's not always good to share. Thought that was a interesting one. Would you agree or disagree?
Depending again on the situation. I mean, if you come from like an era, like for example, as Georgina is now bringing up her son of 10 in this age, absolutely sharing, absolutely everything needs to be shared. But I think that depending, I mean, I'm Dutch, of course, and so my mother was totally differently brought up and everything was... they didn't talk, and that was the big problem. They didn't share, and so therefore there was a lot of like lack of communication, and people didn't understand each other in the same household. And so what happened then was that the youngsters then would leave home because parents are driving mental, you know, absolutely crazy. So yeah, I'm totally for it, sharing, absolutely sharing. But of course, like I said, we're doing that with younger children now because we're actually like learned that it's not good to always like not share, especially where I'm from. But I don't know if that's the same in Ireland or, you know, or if is that the same in England.
Well, I mean, I think that it, the sort of stiff upper lip of the British people is still quite prevalent, I think. So I was kind of interested to read that article because, I mean, I've been out of the UK for 14 years now, but certainly when I left, nobody I knew was going to therapy and would ever even think about going to therapy. It was like, you know, you get on with it and you soldier on and you do your best. You might share with your girlfriend, but you would very rarely seek professional help. I associate therapy with the US and only the US. But I agree. I think that our generation and down are more used to sharing their feelings and saying, you know, I want to be heard. I need you to tell me how you're feeling. And these fantastic mental health campaigns, which are, it's good to talk, it's okay to talk, ask for help. I think that it's gone a long way, but I don't think we're all the way there yet. The amount of suicides that is, and attempts that are still happening, I don't know that we are. That article suggests, come on now, everyone's in therapy, do we really need it? I don't know how much that's true.
No.
You know, I think it depends on the kind of therapy, because, you know, people can go to a therapist and they're still talking about the same problem 10 years later. And the therapist is charging, no disrespect, 70, 80, 90 euros a session. And their business is to have clients. So hopefully therapists have a good you know, etiquette that they're actually trying to heal the patient. Mm. But I know other therapists who are amazing who say, we're going to do 6 sessions, we're going to deal with whatever it is, let's say it's grief or a heartbreak or whatever the issue is. Mm-hmm. And after 6 sessions, we're going to do this, this and this. And, you know, if you're not, if I can't fix you by then, I really feel like that's all I can give you as a service.
Yeah.
And then I think you need to go to somebody else. And I know someone who does that, actually. And I think what a real fair way that it isn't only about monetary gain from the therapist's point of view.
Yeah.
And I often think about talking about your problems is obviously important because you need to express it and get it off your mind. But when, I mean, obviously, as you know, I studied science of the mind and psychology, and they say that if you keep constantly talking about a problem all of the time, what you do is you just keep bringing more focus and more attention to that problem. I'm not trying to undermine a problem. I mean, we all have different issues on a scale of 1 to 10. But let's say, for example, I always imagine if you had a CD that you play in your car and your least favorite track is track number 10, it's not irritating song that really annoys you, makes you feel so frustrated, brings back bad memories. Well, sometimes going to therapy is constantly pressing track 10. You go next week, track 10 again. And you're paying to play track 10 for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And I get it, people need to talk, but at a certain point we really need to work on our own mental health, to take a deep breath in, say that happened, it was really, really awful, I've done so much therapy, but you know what, now I really need to move on. And by focusing on things that we actually love in our life and people who we love, our business, our passion, brings our mind to a different avenue rather than constantly talking about the problem going around in a circle and a circle.
It can start to define you, I think, if you're not careful.
Oh, your absolutely.
Problem. You become a victim. Yeah. Become a victim.
Yeah.
You're becoming the problem. Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. And something that I've never forgotten, Masha Malka saying, who used to be a regular on the show, who's actually coming on Women Talk in a few weeks' time. I remember her saying, bad things happen to us all. You know, we all go through financial difficulties, health worries, we all lose people, lose jobs, all kind of things like that. Everyone goes through that kind of thing. It's how you deal with it.
Yes.
Absolutely. How you react to it.
Absolutely.
And how you feel on a daily basis. And this, I think, is a really interesting thing to sort of remind ourselves of. How you feel is a choice.
Mm. Yeah.
You choose to be happy.
Yes.
Or you choose to be sad. And absolutely, it's not always, it doesn't feel as simple as that sometimes, you know. It's obviously, if something happens and you cry because of what happens, it's very easy to think, well, I'm crying because that has happened. But that in some way you are choosing to allow yourself to be upset over what has happened.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Even looking at grief, everybody deals with it in a different way, and rightly or wrongly, some people will say, God, that's awful, and take a deep breath and move on. And other people will be in floods of tears, and every time they think of that person, they'll break down. Other people will be able to think of them and, you know, feel sad but get on with their day. And it's just a really just that interesting concept of choosing how we feel. And every time I think of it, I think, wow, that's so profound.
So
isn't
true.
It
I actually, Lucas was having trouble at school, and I said that to him. I said, you can't, if you've spoken to the teacher, you've spoken to them, you've done your bits, you now can't influence what that person does to you. The only thing you can do is control how you react to it.
Yes.
Whether you choose to walk away, whether you choose to be furious and angry and then, you know, be violent, and then you're then in trouble, you know. So if you can try to take that control back from the situation and sort of say, okay, I choose to walk away, whether it's sort of, you know, sticking your tongue out or saying something that makes you feel a little bit better when you do it, fine. And do you know what, it was really interesting for me because I've started to take my own advice on that.
Wow.
You know, and because I thought, God, you are really good at giving this advice out, girl, but terrible at doing it yourself. You know, and just starting to think like that has really changed my experience.
How
of
wonderful.
The things. Nothing around me has changed.
Yeah.
Only the way I'm trying to look at it. And I'm not always doing very good at it still, but I think that's incredibly profound. And the kind of gratitude thing, I've been trying a little bit of the gratitude, it does help. How lucky am I? How happy, you know, how good are things?
And how lucky are we that we actually have been taught these things or practice these things, and that we can sharing. We're now back to the sharing, because this makes you really feel happy. If you're living with your gratitude, that's a choice. That's a personal choice.
Gratitude's an amazing thing.
It's an amazing thing. It's one of the most important ones in my eyes, because when you live in gratitude, the love comes automatically. Because you just are so grateful for everything, like waking up or having a lovely breakfast or being together with good friends or anything that happens. And it takes the mind off of anything negative, of like, oh, yeah, depression comes in. It's a you choose it again. Mm-hmm. It's a choice that everybody personally can take.
You know, going back to one of the very most famous positive thinking or self-development artist, Louise Hay, she wrote books saying, change your thoughts, in my Irish accent, change your life. So we have a choice. Do we want to think, when you wake up in the morning, are you grateful for your bed and the blue sky and the day you have ahead? Or are you complaining about your bank balance or your boyfriend? You know, you have a choice on what to think about. And when we look at a glass, that typical example of, is it half full or is it half empty? It's actually whatever way you perceive it to be. So a lot of life is perception, and it just mirrors back what you're actually feeling inside your heart. And that's why working on yourself, on a self-development point of view, helps you a lot to build up your spiritual and your mental muscles, so that you think, okay, this situation has happened, I have a choice how to react. And your ego will want to react in a way to prove that we're right, that we're correct, and that person's wrong. That's what our ego will do, and that's what the human mind and the monkey mind will do. It's only when we start to restrain the mind and start to learn, okay, this has happened, see it as a lesson, and you might react badly, but then sit back and think, take a big deep breath and think, I have a choice to either go down the love route or the fear route, because that's basically what it is. You have two polar opposite emotions, love and fear, and then to try to stay in the gratitude and the appreciation, give yourself a better day, because when we get angry and we hold on to things, we're actually only hurting ourselves.
Yeah, it's totally vibration, frequency. It's like not a good thing to hang around in it.
Wise words.
Wise words. Women's talk.
Yeah, like it. I almost don't want to go on to the next subject now, because this is really nice. We've only got a minute and a bit left, so let's stick on nice things. I had a guest on yesterday and we were talking about mindfulness and meditation, and I said I think a lot of people are scared of meditation, thinking that they need to sit there with their legs crossed going for 10 minutes. And he was just saying, no, you can incorporate it into your day. You can do it while you're washing up or while you're going for a walk or whatever. How would you describe meditation?
Meditation is anything that rises your vibration into anything that makes you feel better than you already did. So, for example, if walking along the beach makes you feel better than you already were, that's an act of meditation. If being in your garden, picking your plants and watering, that's a meditation. Listening to beautiful music, it doesn't even have to be mantras, listening to music, anything that raises or elevates your frequency or your mood is a meditation. You don't have to sit in meditation pose, anything that raises your vibration higher.
That's very interesting.
Maybe we're doing it more than we thought.
Maybe.
Georgina.
Well, because you know, I've been terrible. I've gone to sort of yoga classes and things like meditate. So, and their visualization. I am the worst at visualization. Think you're in a forest. I'm thinking, okay, first let's start with a tree. Can I get a drink?
We are finished now, ladies. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hannah.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.